Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Welcome to another edition of BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I am Vicky Barcelona. And who the hell let this guy in here? Oh, wait, no, that's BJ. We have BJ Shea.
How do?
The show's namesake. And always running the board with such gusto is Joey Deez.
So much gusto.
Gusto. I just love that word.
On today's episode, since BJ's here, we're going to talk The Last of Us.
Last of Us.
And the real reason he's in the studio is because Picard Season 3 debuted.
Picard. Star Trek Picard.
So we will start Star Trek. Gareth Von Kallbach will join us to talk Marvel on Disney Plus, Mando Season 4, Liam Neeson is not doing Qui-Gon Jinn.
Oh, no!
And some PSVR 2 news, and of course, the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com.
.com!
It's going to have our blogs, podcasts, and more!
More?
Or just search BJ Shea's Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Odyssey, iTunes, all the words.
Search.
Just search BJ Shea's Geek Nation and you'll find us. It's easy.
It is easy, and you can literally find us anywhere.
Yes.
Excuse me, so much greatness.
Yeah, there is that.
We've killed Vicky.
Sorry. Yes. I think I might be getting one of these contagious things that...
I don't want to hear that. I'm in a room with
all you. All the Last of Us characters are getting.
Oh, you got the mushroom thing.
Yep, I think I got the mushroom thing.
The fungus.
Thing.
Oh, she's got the fungus among us.
Okay, actually, I don't want to say that I have that. That sounds icky.
Yeah. Well, your name is Vicky. So...
Aww. Wow. Icky, Vicky, you're so icky. Just the thought about you makes me oh so sicky.
Sing it! Fungus time!
Jesus, that is an actual song. Thank you, Fairly Odd Parents.
Oh, I thought it was fungus time.
It's
the fungus odd parents, yeah, that's the thing. It's special fungus edition. Yep.
And the Icky Vicky fungus edition.
Well, that segue into our first topic today. Thank you, Vicky.
You're welcome.
Oh, is that the last DeLorean?
Yes.
Bunch.
Hey, yeah.
Can I get a drum? Can that be in? So I can
hey,
do that?
If you guys want to watch this new show called The Last of Us, just watch seasons 1 through 2 of The Mandalorian. And, you know, just imagine him with his mask off. And just imagine Grogu is a precocious child. And you know what? Hey, you've got the show.
You've nailed Pedro Pascal's best roles. Mm-hmm. That was good.
I am the last DeLorean.
Wait, I do have a question once you guys are done about this, about Pedro Pascal and his roles.
Okay.
Okay, that sounded bad. But yeah,
all
continue.
20s. He rolls 20s.
Oh, yes, he does. A crit hit.
Yes, well, we are 6 episodes through HBO's series The Last of Us. BJ.
Yeah, we saw Kin.
Oh, I thought you said we suck, and I was like, well, that's unfortunate. Yeah. I thought
we saw Kin.
Kin.
That was the name of the last episode. We saw.
Yes. We are now 6 episodes, and I've given a little bit of my thoughts on the first 4-ish.
Yes.
What do you think so far now that we're 6 in?
The Last DeLorean. I mean, it really is just a wisecracking kid, and, you know, it's basically Grogu that talks more, and he's just got to basically take this kid, because the kid's special. Instead of going to see Luke Skywalker, we got to see Freddy Firefly is basically what he's going to go find.
You noticed that too, huh?
Yeah, and definitely some Walking Dead elements. I have watched all of The Walking Dead. So, you know, basically, is it the Commonwealth? I think the Commonwealth, you know, kind of where the governor hung out. And I forget the name of, Alexandria. It's kind of like they're going to Alexandria in this last episode where they got a cool place where everybody's cool. Though this time it looks like everybody is cool, but if it was The Walking Dead, there'd be something wrong with this supposedly cool society. But that didn't happen. They went and they came, they saw. So it's enjoyable. Is it a must watch? Gosh, again, if you've watched The Walking Dead or you watch The Mandalorian, I kind of think it's kind of a sort of a lesser form of both.
Yeah, it's well shot. And I will say the acting is incredible. I don't think there's any, lack of talent that they got for this show. I think maybe I only have one casting that I didn't really love, but I didn't even think it was her fault necessarily. I think the script for her was bad. She was inserted into the story, and that was, of course, the Kansas City main woman who ended up getting eaten by the child.
Oh, right. The her brother.
Yes.
Yeah, that lady. I forget what her name was, but yeah, she was...
Catherine, I think.
Yeah, Catherine.
Yeah.
And it was...
Here's my problem with this show. Every scene with Pedro Pascal interacting with a character besides Ellie, their interactions are great, but we already knew that. That's the story of The Last of Us. Every interaction with him and another character in the world is awesome. I'm like, this is what I want to see in the show. But everything else in the show to me is just so not believable within their even their own world. We literally have this character in this episode finally reach his brother, who lives in Wyoming, which is a trek that he is like not wanting to do on.
Months.
Which should be astronomically impossible to do because this is a zombie-filled world where people don't leave their zones because for a good reason they could die. Like very realistically, most people die when they leave their zone. He goes all this way to find his brother in this episode, meets his brother, and his brother's like, yeah, I stopped sending messages because my wife told me to.
Yeah, she said not to.
And it was like, you couldn't send one last message?
Yeah.
I was like,
I'm okay.
And yeah. On top of that, Pedro Pascal's character, Joel, lost his wife or his partner, Jess, to go find him.
That's the whole idea, yeah. It's sort of like, okay.
And there's not even a scene where they're angry. Like, he's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
It's just a, okay.
Yeah, I guess that's what's up. And now you're getting married and you're having a kid and you should be happy for me. It's like old school dude upset. It's like, I think I'm upset, but am I? And okay.
And that's my problem is like, I love so many things about this show, but then it's like, it does this with the plot. And I'm like, I get it. This is a Joel and Ellie storyline. This is what the game was about. It's supposed to be their journey through, you know, essentially becoming human again, if you will, because, you know, Ellie has been imprisoned her whole life, doesn't know what the world is like, or only has read it in books. And Joel is rugged and beaten and broken because he's had to kill to survive. They
go on a journey. And he lost his daughter, and now he's got this sort of surrogate daughter.
Exactly. So they're going through this journey, but it's like all the major plot points to get them through this journey are so bad and rushed. And I don't know why, because this show is a solid for me right now. It's between 7 or 8, despite that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that is this is a video game turned into a TV show problem.
There you have it, son.
Or if it's just a, maybe we stay too true to the video game. I don't know. I didn't play the whole video game. I watched a lot of the clips, and I've seen people play it, and I played it a little bit, but I didn't want to spoil it.
And I'm currently watching all the cinematics. That a lot of people have uploaded the entire game on YouTube. I'm currently into that just to see what's changed, what's different, and it's tough. It's tough to make a show based on this, because the video game's, look, for a video game, very entertaining. But if you're telling me to sit down and watch this as a show, you've got to do something amazing, because the video game, you know, just the cinematics, like as far as like, would it be an Academy Award winning story? No.
And I don't know about you, BJ, but this is what I keep running into. I don't feel suspense in this show.
No.
They haven't shown very many zombies, and people keep harping back on this, well, we didn't want to show a bunch of zombies and make it a zombie show. And I'm like, but you have to show some zombies. Well, I have to feel like they can die.
Well, the idea also, they keep telling you they're not out here. You don't have to worry about out here. You have to worry about humans out here. And it's like, yeah, The Walking Dead did that. I mean, The Walking Dead did that very well. And also, they gave us zombies. Like, they were able to tell us that the humans were dangerous, but they still gave us the zombies, which that was part of their thing. They really wanted to give you cool-looking zombies.
Yeah, in the first two episodes, I was a solid 9 on this show. I'm like, this show is great. Great acting, great casting, great plot, world-building, set, everything. Because we saw zombies, we got clickers, but then right after that third episode, it was like, third episode diverges, tells a beautiful story, but then never really picks back up on that suspense that I want to feel like when you're in a post-apocalyptic world that you can die.
Yeah, because they don't have the money to really show us these clickers, and so they've decided to make them not a big threat, even though they are. They're supposed to be able to, like, if you step on a vine, they're all supposed to go, hey, he's way over there, let's run over and get him. But they've created a world where, except if you go out and travel in the snow in the middle of nowhere, then don't worry about it. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we get a bloater in episode 5.
Yeah, okay.
That's a two-part episode if you take it. They get to Kansas City in 4, and then 5 is the resolution. But even that, I'm sitting there and I'm like, but all these characters, like, I get, like, they have these beautiful stories where they introduce, you know, Henry and his son, and like, I love this, but like, they kill them all off.
Yeah, don't
get
attached to anybody that you think might be a good character.
Yeah, and I'm like, that's a beautiful story. But the problem is, like, what the Kansas City storyline is, we're moving from city to city, and it's hopelessness, because I know that Joel and Ellie aren't going to die. I mean, it's the beginning of the beginning of the series. They might die later on, who knows? But in episode 5, they're not dying, right? But if everyone else around them dies, and the only reason these zombies ever show up from 3 to 6 to 7 is because people are really stupid, because and it's not like they're sneaking around like in the video game. There's not this sense of they got to take a left or a right, and the right might both have or they might both have zombies, but they're trying to like, you know, map it out. There's none of that. There's literally just, hey, that Death Valley over there, that Death River, don't go over to Death River because there's zombies there. Oh, there are zombies there? We're going to go anyways. Go anyways. There are no zombies.
Yeah, whoops.
Oh, well, it was just to keep people away from the town. I'm like, there's no suspense here.
No.
When there are actually no zombies in the show.
You're right. The only thing you're afraid of are humans, and there's no governor. I keep going back to The Walking Dead. There's no governor, you know, characters like that. You know, there's no Negan. I mean, this is what made The Walking Dead good, is that if you want me to be afraid of a bunch of humans, you've got to give me a bad guy. You've got to give me a boss if you're not going to give me the bloater as a boss.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah, and they don't, and we haven't seen anybody like that. It's just random idiots, which, again, you know, if we had never seen a show like this before, Joe, I would be like, hey, this is a really novel show. The humans are the bad guys. I hate to say it, but like for the last 10 years, that's what The Walking Dead has said, is the show's not about the zombies. It's really the people that are still alive. They're really the issue.
Most definitely. And I do love the way they're trying to do the character storylines in this show. But the problem is you have to have, for instance, Ellie is supposed to be this cure. But no one really knows about her until literally this episode, where finally Joel's like, hey, to his brother, Ellie can't get infected. And he's like, oh, now this makes sense on why you're going on this journey. And it's like, we've gone through so many cities. Why does no one care about this?
And why wouldn't he want her to get, like, Joel, I'll take you. Like, this is huge.
Yeah.
I got a kid coming into the world. This would be great if we could have the kid grow up. Like, he could easily go to the woman that was in charge and go, dude, I got to go because we got a kid coming. But look, she's immune. Let's take her to the Fireflies and blah, blah, blah. Nothing. It's like, why wouldn't that be a thing? Or why would it not be a thing? Which I could also understand the other side going, we like the world the way it is. We don't want the other world to come back. So we actually don't want her to cure everything. I can understand that storyline too, but they don't give us anything.
Yeah, that is my problem, is it feels like she's unattached from the world, which detracts from the story, when they could have just attached her to some characters or to some, at least so someone knows about her, because the Fireflies know about her. But every time they try to find them, they're always dead.
Yeah, that's the problem. And I'm like, less and less people know about her.
And we don't have any interaction with the Fireflies after the first two episodes. So you're sitting here in a world that doesn't know the cure exists. Everyone's trying to kill the cure. The cure has no value to anyone but Joel. And Joel's not even taking her because he wants to help. He was taking her to go see his brother.
Yeah, and that ended. Yeah. and it was just like the last episode was like, I really can't take you. There's no way I can take you. And then she says, but I want you to. Okay.
Yeah,
and that was such horrible writing in my mind. It's like, okay, no.
I get what they were trying to do, but it's just...
No.
The problem is they're making his character broken, which he is, but they're selling it in a way in which he, for whatever reason, has gone through all these events leading up to meeting his brother, and like that, those don't occur to him like that those are really dangerous events. It's like, oh, I can't take her anymore because everyone around me dies. It's like, Joel, you just dragged her halfway across the country.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
A million zombie-infested areas. Like, I think you've, you know, proposed the most dangerous thing you could do. And on top of that, how are you going to hurt if you just everyone goes with you? Like, wouldn't you bring everyone to protect
her? Bring everybody.
Get the whole city or the whole, you know.
Which, again, they did on The Walking Dead. They always traveled as a group because they realized strength in numbers. And, you know, again, that's the problem. And, you know, they're still giving this, like, IMDb gave this a 9.1 out of 10, Kin. And I'm like, why? Is it because of that one episode, you know, with Frank and Bill? Which, you know, that was a great episode, but are we going to love this show because of one episode? You've got to judge the show, or am I high and, you know, people didn't watch The Walking Dead? I don't understand. This is not as good as The Mandalorian, and it's not as good as The Walking Dead. So my brain goes, I'm watching a lesser show. Hate to say it.
I think my big thing about it is I can understand if you're a video game fan, like if you played the video game, you probably love this show because this show is a really, really well done video game like show. Like if you think about it, like the acting's incredible. Like I said, I still want to watch the show. I have this show still around a 7.5 despite the plot problems, which means it's being carried by the acting and the cinematography and all that stuff, kind of a thing.
But yeah, I'm not playing this show.
Exactly.
Because even watching the cinematics, I have to tell you, it's kind of boring.
And, you know, who knows? Maybe when we get to the end of the season, it'll all pay off. Because they do tend to budget towards the end of the season.
And I don't know what's happening. I don't know how the video game ends.
Same,
so yeah. So that at least you may be right there.
But it's slow. Yeah, it's slow, and I do feel like it's safe, and I don't blame them. I think that would make sense from HBO's standpoint. We're making a show off of a video game. Let's make sure we nail at least the basics, and that they have done.
They were very smart, and they waited till Walking Dead was over.
Also true.
And I think it's better than Fear the Walking Dead. Now, granted, I haven't watched Fear in a long time, but I gave a lot of time to Fear the Walking Dead. Just didn't do it for me. And any other Walking Dead that I tried to watch outside of the original, I like this better than that. And again, it has to do, I think, with actors and writing, and you can only have so many good actors and writers. But boy, the OG Walking Dead, and again, The Mandalorian, I keep banging. I just keep beating that dead horse. But I'll still watch it because there's really not a lot on right now. Now, if my schedule was crazy, you know, maybe I'd be going like, oh, I just don't have time for this show anymore. But I'm going to finish the season. I will do that.
So we did get at the end. Joel gets stabbed.
Yeah, with a baseball bat that broke, and he gets stabbed, and he's unconscious. You know, like, of course he's going to be okay, but he shouldn't be.
And that's my thing, too. I'm with you on that. This should be the end of Joel. Now, I don't think they're going to kill him off, but that would drag me in back to the plot.
If he dies,
yeah,
then I'd be like, all right, but I don't think he does in the game, does he?
I don't know. Maybe this is where his brother comes down and turns out.
This is the change they make.
Yeah, and we can
see. If they Ned Stark this, yeah. I'm all for it.
And that's the thing is, like, you can change your reviews on episodes after you get a full season. You go, hey, you know what? It was slow, but if you get past five episodes, the show at six, you know, for the last four episodes, it brings it all together, and then it's worth watching. So, like I said, still 7.5 for me. What are you putting it at right now?
I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll give it a 7 right now, and that's good enough to watch.
Yeah.
But is it good enough to stay?
Well, we'll continue watching and find out. But here's a show that I think we're going to be a little polarized on because it has to do with Star Trek.
Number one. I don't think this show is number one.
Picard Season 2 might have been my worst reviewed television show of the last 10 years. I think that
Season 2, yes.
Yeah, Season 2 was not only unwatchable, but a disservice to the fans.
It really felt like an afternoon special made for TV. It was tough, and you know, there's probably a lot of reasons. There were parts of it that I liked, but not enough to tell you that was a great season.
So let me tell you my thoughts on Picard, Episode 1, Season 3.
And here's the bad thing. They showed the first two episodes at the premiere in L.A. where some fans got to go see it. And it's kind of a bummer. I really wish we could have seen Episodes 1 and 2. I almost wish Paramount would have run them back-to-back for us, even though there was a great cliffhanger at the end of Episode 1. But everybody got to see Episode 2. We as of this airing, we have yet to see it, but we will soon.
Critics have seen through Episode 6, I believe, as well, I heard.
Oh, really?
And they say that the season doesn't really start till Episode 6. So,
really?
Yeah, they say that.
Oh, what?
Prepare yourself.
Okay, well, there's only, 11, 12 episodes? That's not... Yeah. Okay.
So the problem is the bar is real low for this show. So when I say that the first episode of Season 3 is better than Season 2 completely, well, that's not too high. But let's start with the good.
All right.
Picard and Riker are great together.
They
do not miss a beat.
They are. Jonathan Frakes, everybody loves as a director, and he knows his role. He knows that character and plays it. I mean, he turns a two-dimensional character into two-dimensional awesomeness, because that's all Riker really ever was a parody of, in my opinion, a parody of Captain Kirk.
Sure.
And done well.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And their rapport is great. The comedy is great. They beat the dad humor a little bit, you know, into the ground, but I'm okay with it. I think that you got to sell to that audience. This is what this show is now, right? This is a nostalgia trip for everyone that
exactly.
loved Generation.
And these guys are old. So.
Yeah. And I mean, it really shows. Man, Patrick Stewart, I don't even think I realized it in Season 2, but Season 3 is showing me, like, yeah, he's in his 80s.
Yeah, and I mean, which is amazing, because he's probably the healthiest 80-year-old that you've seen.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but at the same...
82, by the way.
82.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you're right. It's just age has caught up to him just in general, but he's still, I mean, you know, he was always the guy that was in great shape, though. You always saw those memes of the starship captains, and everybody had gained a ton of weight except for Patrick Stewart. But yeah, he does look like an 82-year-old guy doing what he's doing.
So, yeah, I suspend my judgment of the plot, because the plot, you know, we haven't gotten a whole lot of great stuff from Star Trek, Picard, and the plot, you know, area, unfortunately. This one starts out pretty unbelievably, but we're going to go with it. The Doctor.
Yeah,
Beverly Crusher.
Beverly Crusher's now a badass rogue whatever.
She has not talked to anyone on the TNG cast for 20 years, and she now finds herself shot on a ship protecting, as we find out later on this episode, to be her son. That, my God, I hope they don't make it Picard's son. Please, please don't make it Picard's son.
It might be. Who knows? But here's the problem, though. I don't think it is because of the name she gave him.
What'd she give him?
His name is Jack, and that was the name of her ex-husband, of Wesley's dad. His name was Jack Crusher. So if it's Picard's kid, and you name him after the dude that Picard basically lost out to, because he was in love with her, but he lost out to Jack, because he said, I was in love with you, but you were married to my best friend, number one, or number Beverly. So she named him Jack, so that's why I don't think it's Picard's kid.
I hope you're right. I just saw a lot of that on the internet, and I was like, God, that would be... We don't need another generation of this show.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, see what I'm saying? But she has one of the most hilarious battle scenes I've ever seen. She is pumping a shotgun that shoots lasers.
God, I hated that. I was like, why are you? Are you supposed to look badass? Is that why every time you pump, like, I'm a badass shotgun? Why? We don't need that kind of thing in, okay.
And it runs out of ammo.
Yeah.
None of this happened 20 years of technology before this.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why they did that to us.
I'm imagining, you know, those flashlights where you have to, like, pump it to get the light to go.
Yep.
Like, you have to use motion or whatever to actually get it to work. That was my immediate thought.
Oh, you're
is that
not
the same reason.
You were not far off, Icky.
Yeah, that was dumb. I don't care how cool you think it looks. It's like, come on.
And then the aliens that are shooting her though have the most badass technology that just fires a million shots
and,
with one downside.
Yeah,
you can't hit anything.
No, that's they were trained at the Stormtrooper Academy.
That's right.
So yeah, they're not going to hit.
They
a
can
damn
hit
thing.
Boxes though. Those boxes got destroyed.
Oh, well, let me tell you, those boxes. That's the thing. They're really good at that. That's why a lot of Federation ships won't carry boxes.
That's very fair. You know, they're not in the shipping industry
because
anymore.
They know those guys are. You know,
they're out.
They get on our ship. Our boxes are doomed.
So Beverly sends an encoded message to, of course, Jean-Luc, who is on Earth. She needs help.
Yeah.
They're running away from an unknown alien that we have not seen before.
Yeah, we haven't seen this, whatever the hell that thing is, which is fine.
Yeah, I like that.
Unfortunately, I saw the teaser trailer, so I know exactly what's happening.
It's Spock, isn't it?
Well, this is what kills me with teaser trailers. I know that they want to do that, but it's like it's like you also know what your episodes are like. Don't show me what everything is.
Yes.
Because I know exactly what's going on. So that cliffhanger, I don't think, like, your mom and I watch it, so luckily she doesn't know. But it's like, I hate that. Why would you make a cliffhanger like this when you know I'm going to see exactly who it is? I know who's on the ship. I know who's the big baddie on that ship. I know everything, and I'm not supposed to know that.
Oh, see, that's why I don't watch those trailers at all anymore for any show.
I like a trailer that shows me action, but I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
But they literally go, ha-ha! I mean, you know, I don't know who she is. But I know, you know, I know what that ship is. I know, she's the lady that hates Jean-Luc and is somehow hunting Beverly. Great. You know.
Without spoiling it.
Yeah, well, the trailer spoiled it, so that's what I know.
So Jean-Luc gets this message.
Yes.
He eventually decodes it. It's a ridiculous scene as well.
Oh,
I don't know why.
Too. She sends a message to his old communicator that he just happens to have hanging around his desk. It's like, it's not even in a, like, he's not even packed away in a locker somewhere. I have my old uniform in a box under my desk. Number one.
Yeah, luckily, he was moving at least, but I did find it hilarious that he's like, I'll check the teapot. I'll check my little cupboard over here. I'll check my uniform where I stored all my old Starfleet stuff. Oh, there it is. And I was like, why would you not start there?
It made the chirping sound like a communicator. Why would you look in the friggin' teapot?
Yeah.
it's like, Jean-Luc, you had this thing on for years.
Yeah.
You're going to recognize what that sound is.
So he gets it, and there's a message that he needs to be decoded. He doesn't know what the password is. Now, this doesn't make any sense, because we find out later on in the episode that Riker has the password, which begs the question of why she wouldn't have sent it to Riker. But
yes. She told him not to go to Starfleet. Riker is Starfleet, which means he literally has to go to Starfleet to decode the message. She says, don't involve Starfleet. But here's a clue that only a guy in Starfleet can answer. Beverly, you and your damn shotgun, get the hell off my screen.
So as you can see what we were saying, the plot, maybe don't pay attention to the plot.
Yeah, you really have to go, oh, it's a nostalgia trip.
Yeah, but luckily, So Jean-Luc does end up meeting up with Riker.
And he goes to Starfleet.
And they decode. So the best part is they decode the message. And Beverly does say this many times. She says, "You can't evolve Starfleet because I can't trust anyone. I can only trust you, Jean-Luc."
So there's only one thing to do. Let's get on a Starfleet vessel.
Yep, that's the first thing they do, because you know what? This is Star Trek. And to make sure everyone knows it's Star Trek, yeah, we got to get on a ship.
And we're going to get on a Starfleet vessel where the captain hates our friggin' guts.
That's right.
This is perfect for this non-Starfleet mission we're supposed to be
on. But don't worry, Spock. No, sorry, 7 of 9.
Oh, that's right, yes.
That's right. She is the first officer. So she's going to completely disobey her captain and ruin her career to take us
on
a secret mission.
After Picard said, "You should get back in Starfleet and not be so rogue." Okay, until you come on a ship and be rogue and make me go rogue.
Yeah.
Thanks, you friggin' hypocrite.
So anyways, the story does end up progressing. And we do end up getting to a point where they get on the Beverly ship. They fly out there. They find her. She's shot. Yep. There's a funny scene with Riker and his old knees not working or bending over.
Yep.
That was pretty good.
They were old men, you know.
And we are off on our adventure. We are going to try to save a cryo-frozen Beverly.
Yes.
And her son, Jack.
Good old Jackie.
And they get approached by aliens at the very end of the episode.
Yeah.
And we'll go from there.
Yeah, we'll see. There's a big badass ship that looks a lot to me like Nero's ship.
You know,
from back in the J.J. Abrams days. So... Part two, we will watch very soon. I mean, I call it part two because it's such a cliffhanger, and they did show it in a two-episode thing. I like it, and I hear it's going to be fantastic. Of course, Will Wheaton loves everything Star Trek, so it's kind of hard to know if Will loved everything, including season two. So,
this will be a cheesy season, but I think it will be a good payoff. They already made a hilarious joke to Geordi LaForge's daughter, who is the pilot of the ship, Crash LaForge, as Riker gives her nickname from her cadet days. So I do think this is going to hit in the right place. This is the cheesy, nostalgic Star Trek that they should have done with Picard originally, as opposed to being whatever that Borg-Romulan love story offset was in season one that was okay.
Yeah. I didn't hate season one, but boy... Yeah, it could have been season two where they gave us this.
Did you remember, by the way, I forgot about this in season three, Picard's an android.
Yes, that's the other thing.
I totally forgot about that.
I know, which is that also really irritating.
But he's an android that... This is the best explanation. He's an android that completely mimics who Picard was as a human, including his old age and feeling.
Yeah, so he's an 82-year-old android.
So he's the worst android we've ever created.
Thanks. Thanks, Dr. Soong.
Could have given him life, young age, could have done anything they wanted. No crippling anxiety and terrible knees.
Really, that was the lamest part of season one, was like, oh, you wanted us to think he died, but he didn't. Thanks, Hollywood. I hated that ending. I thought that ending was dumb. Just don't have him die. Just don't have him die. You know what? It was the season's not going to... it really didn't hinge on that. I knew he wasn't going to die because I knew there was going to be a season two, and that's the way you did it? Okay.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still excited to watch the rest of the season. I am already 9 times happier with it than I was with last season. You know, so we only have up to go from here. Also, who has some other great news outside of the Star Trek universe.
Oh, really?
Gareth Von Kallenbach from Skewed and Reviewed. He's got some awesome news for us, and we got to talk with him right now. With us today is our friend Gareth Von Kallenbach, the master of all things video game knowledge, movie knowledge, anything you could ask for. He is from SKNR.net, that is Skewed and Reviewed. Gareth, you're back. How are you doing today, my friend?
Oh, man, lots of stuff.
Oh, yes. Well, I think we should kick it off with our favorite company, Disney. Disney tends to have everything you could possibly want on one app and then, for some reason, push everything back. I hear we've got cuts coming to Marvel. What's going on, Gareth?
Well, it's an interesting thing because, as we talked about on a prior show, Quantumania came out. It actually did better than any of the previous Marvel films, but it had this issue where the critics didn't like it, but the general public seems okay with it. Now, obviously, the next few weeks will do a lot with it, but Marvel seems to be thinking that perhaps they're being too aggressive with the Marvel shows on Disney Plus. And there is some concern, and like we've talked about off air, some think that maybe this might also be something that Star Wars is experiencing, but that's an entirely different scenario. So the idea is that with all these Marvel shows coming to Disney Plus, perhaps they're making the movies less of an event, and that some people might be getting a little confused feeling that we've got to keep up with the Disney Plus shows in order to stay current with the movies and vice versa.
Oh, interesting. So there's a divide between essentially the cinematic universe, which happens in theaters, and then the at-home streaming service that does Disney Plus, and whether or not you have to watch essentially everything to get everything.
Correct. And so what Marvel is doing is they're taking a look at it, and it's not necessarily canceling things. From what I understand, it is more of a staggered rollout, because we had talked in the past that one of their grand plans was to each week always have either new Marvel or new Star Wars content. And as such, there was plenty of shows in the works. Well, what they're looking at now is saying, okay, perhaps we have too many Marvel things coming out in 1 year on the channel. Perhaps less is more. So, for example, we know that Loki Season 2 is going to come out this year. It does tie in with Quantumania and Kang the Conqueror. So there is a reason that that has a need to be out. We know that a trailer is coming for that very soon, so that's a good thing. But we also know that if you look at the big picture, the only other thing that they are sure of is going to be Secret Invasion, because that does play into what's coming. But some of the other things, like Daredevil, like Agatha's series, which is filming now, some of the other things like Echo and so on, are probably going to be pushed back to 2024. And so the idea will be, maybe there's only going to be two or three Marvel shows per year on Disney Plus, as opposed to four or five.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a smart idea. You know, we have had an overload of Marvel content, and I personally, I mean, I love it, but I know that, and I know a lot of people will say, you know, well, you can't have too much content, right? But that B word, burnout, does seem to come up a lot among fans that are thinking, you know, how much of this can we really have every year before I start getting bored?
Exactly. And, you know, and you have to look at kind of the timing. We had the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and while events from that are going to be revisited later, there is going to be a gap. And you look at Hawkeye, and people look at that and go, okay, that was really entertaining. But then you have things like Miss Marvel series, where you introduce the character, but you're not going to see her again until the next film. And then you have She-Hulk, where they say, well, we're not going to do a second season of it, just like we had one in Vision. We're not doing a second season of this, but you'll see the characters again. And I think they're kind of looking at it more of a, instead of using this as a platform to get characters who we aren't sure are ready to carry their own show, and use it as a way to introduce them and then have them blend in with the with characters going forward, that may stay. But to essentially say, kind of like the She-Hulk scenario, we're not quite sure you're a movie, but we're going to give you a series and then pop you back in somewhere down the line, that seems to be the very vague area right now. It's like, is anything canceled? Not that we know of, but how many unannounced things that were, you know, moving forward, if they said, hey, let's put the brakes on this now. But it just seems to be more of a slower rollout and maybe a bigger gap between them.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea in general. I have been waiting for a little bit better quality of show as well. Even in the movies, I wouldn't say we've had a real blockbuster smash hit. I personally liked Ant-Man. It definitely had some huge flaws, but I thought in terms of an enjoyable ride, it was there. But it did not really push the storyline and the world building too much further than I would have expected for a major, you know, push forward for their season coming up here in the MCU universe, the next phase. But we'll have to wait and find out.
Exactly, exactly.
But moving from that Disney Plus Marvel property to something on Disney Plus that can do no wrong, Mandalorian Season 4 has already been written. How is this possible? We haven't even started Season 3 yet, Gareth.
No kidding. Well, Favreau let it out the other day. And what's interesting about this is you sit there and you go, man, this guy is just going crazy. You got Season 3 coming. He's already said the outline and scripts for Season 4 are done. And let's not forget, they also have Skeleton Crew and The Acolyte coming, which have been filming. He's involved with that. And this is an interesting dilemma. Now, we've talked in the past, we've got Star Wars Celebration coming up. I keep hearing again and again and again, not from publicists, but from people who are supposedly in the know, that they are going to announce the next live-action film and when that's going to be. And that just makes sense, you know. You have the big four, you have that. However, we all know how, I don't want to say mixed, but, you know, the Star Wars fans can be very hard to appease.
Yes.
And we all know that they were not exactly thrilled with the sequel trilogy, which is ironic because they didn't like the prequel trilogy, and now they look back on it and go, oh, I like the prequel trilogy more than I like this.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
You know, we like Rogue One. We were generally fine with that, but then we were mixed on Solo. Didn't like Solo, and now they're looking at it going, well, Solo actually wasn't so bad, actually. And the funny thing is, if you ask most Star Wars fans, they will say, I've been okay with the TV series. I like The Mandalorian. Book of Boba Fett, people were kind of mixed on, but they like what they saw. I've enjoyed The Bad Batch. I thought that's been very entertaining.
Yep, yep.
And we have other you know, and then, of course, Andor did very well. You know, I mean, you could say, like, if I wanted to be nitpicky, I could say why I wanted more action. But it was such a great character-driven story that at least it held your attention. And unlike some of these streaming shows, I've always felt that one of the biggest problems is you have 5 hours of content or five episodes of content that they stretch out over 8 to 10 episodes, and they put a lot of filler in it.
Yep.
You don't necessarily get that with Andor. You looked at some of it, but you were like, wow, this is actually setting up to a bigger picture. So that's the big debate. People are looking at it going, Marvel needs to cut back because there's too much. Does Star Wars need to do the same thing? But then people are saying, I think we can all agree that the Disney Plus Star Wars content, by and large, has generally gone over better than most of the movies.
Definitely agree with that.
And that is an interesting. Oh, and let's not even forget Obi-Wan. You know, that there were, of course, going to be people who picked at it, but I think most people were quite happy and satisfied with the finished product.
Yeah, I think it's crazy that it's almost the exact opposite. Where Disney was really succeeding in the MCU universe in theaters, they were struggling on the streaming services. Star Wars has done the opposite. They're doing great on the streaming services, but they struggle in the theaters.
And I think, in a way, that could be part of the scenario in that you have this larger universe in Star Wars, and if you look at Mandalorian, we know that there have been some cameos and stuff, but they were saying, okay, we're going to look at an era that we've not seen before, post-Return of the Jedi, pre-The Force Awakens, and we've all heard the stories about how we're going to start to see how the remnants of the Empire became the seeds of the First Order and things like that. And it's interesting because we're starting to see Disney get the confidence that, you know what, we don't need to have legacy characters, and we do not need to have the Jedi in everything to tell a compelling Star Wars story. But you also get the, you know, we've already seen it popping up online. Some people saying, yeah, but they're giving you too much. They're giving you too much. And then others saying, well, wait a second. It's a massive universe. A massive galaxy. There's all these stories we don't know about. Why shouldn't they be allowed to play around in areas that have not been explored or possibly expand on them and give us a better picture of how it all fits in, as long as it doesn't contradict or undermine the movies? And, you know, and remember, George Lucas himself, I know he's not involved with that, but he used to always say, you know, the other stuff, the games, the comics, the books, those are all sandbox, what-ifs, whatever. Only the films are canon. And now we have this thing of, well, under the new ownership, everything is canon because it all has to be approved and tied in.
Very interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, they had a big thing when they took over where they essentially had a brain trust go through and decide, you know, of the books and of the comics, what was canon, what was expanded universe. And they sorted all that out. And then supposedly now the movies obviously are canon. The TV shows are canon. And then there's been a debate, well, how much of these comics, books, or whatever? And it's kind of like, well, those are generally a mix of canon and expanded universe, but like anything, they have to be approved before they go into it. So, you know, this has made the whole issue with Jedi Fallen Order, Jedi Survivor. Will his character show up at some point in a live action or animated show? And yep. You could say that's a great one, but I also remember going back to Shadows of the Empire, and everyone kept expecting that character to show up in something, and he didn't. But they also have far more options now than they did back then.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there is so much lore to the Star Wars galaxy universe, like you said, the whole genre itself. So it does not surprise me that they're dipping more into it and getting a little more free with it, in the sense of we can tell stories that are outside of the main Jedi storyline and still be fine. Unfortunately, I did hear, though, that we are not getting Liam Neeson back as Qui-Gon Jinn. That was a story I wanted to hear about.
Yeah, you know, and this one really surprised me because he essentially, and I'm paraphrasing here, had said that he was approached about doing a Qui-Gon series, and he did not want to do it. He felt, he apparently turned him down flat because he felt that all of these miniseries are essentially undermining the film. And I know that there's been this whole thing about less is more, that, you know, when we had a Star Wars film, there was a 3-year gap between the movies, and it was a major deal when the next movie came. We had the 3 movies, and then we had a 17-year gap before we got the prequels. And there was even a lot of question about, would we ever see a Star Wars film again? You know, is this it? And then we get the 3 movies again with a 3-year gap in between them. And Lucas essentially said, okay, that's it, I'm done. The future of Star Wars is on the small screen. And then he sells it to Disney, and I immediately, the moment the news came down, said, they're not paying this kind of money to sit on the franchise. And moments after they announced it, the sequel series was announced.
Yep.
But if you remember with the sequel series, we had a Star Wars movie every year because they were able to crank these movies out within 2 years. And it was a case of you would get a sequel movie, and then we got Rogue One. Then you got the next sequel movie. Then you got Solo, and then we got The Rise of Skywalker. So every year there was a Star Wars film, and if you remember, the big issue was they went from putting The Last Jedi out in December and then putting Solo out just a few months later. Solo didn't do well. There's a lot of debate as to why, but, you know, many people say perhaps they put it out against too much competition in the summer, and it was too close to the last film. And now the whole thing is, look at all these TV series, live action, animated. Perhaps we're undermining the impact of the movies in that they are not going to be the big special event that they were in the past. It is simply going to be like binging an episode of, hey, guess what? We're going to put 4 episodes or 5 episodes together and stick them up on the screen.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because he was willing to come back for his cameo.
Sure. Yep.
But he wasn't willing to come back and do a series. So was it time? Was it money? I mean, yeah, he's working, but we've talked off air. If you look at his last few films, they haven't lit up the box office. And yes, you can blame the pandemic and so on, but they've been a mixed bag. We've been sent a lot of them to essentially, here's a, you know, put in a password, watch it over your computer. But it's essentially the same tough guy role with a, you know, questionable past, trying to make good film. And he said for years, I'm getting too old to be playing these tough guys in these action films, yet he keeps doing it. I mean, his new film is a take on Philip Marlowe the detective, but again, it is an action film and so on and so forth. So, you know, I sit there and go, why wouldn't you return to your beloved character unless you don't want to do the commitment that a TV series would ask for versus a film? Or, you know, what is it? Or is the schedule just too busy? And it's surprising, but that was his stated reason, that he felt it would just take away from the films too much.
Ah, that's too bad. I don't know. His agent didn't talk to me because I would have made it happen. I wanted to see him back as Qui-Gon Jinn. I mean, I grew up with those movies, early 2000s, you know, him and Obi-Wan. I mean, they were so good. But unfortunately, it sounds like it will not be in the works. Before we get out of here, Gareth, I did want to talk a little about the PSVR 2 launch. Now, I know you've got one of these in back at your house. How are you enjoying it?
Well, the technology is pretty impressive, I'll tell you that. you know, you can go into it forever with the tech specs, but the you know, the multiple cameras that are built into it, so you don't have to have the camera in front of the TV. The 4K, the eye tracking, the new controllers are really nice, and I think it's fantastic. I know at first a lot of people are going to be faced with sticker shock. That $569 price tag, you know, it is more than the console. But as I tell people, if you get past that and look at the hardware, comparable priced units are $700 to $1,000 for the PC. So you're getting a really good piece of hardware. So for me, what it comes down to is the games. And what I'm really happy about is when the PSVR 1 launched, there were a handful of games that I felt were really enjoyable. But the trick with a lot of the games for me was they were enjoyable in small amounts, so like 30 minutes or so at a time. And when you took the helmet off, there was that kind of, I don't want to say disorientation, but there was that reacclimation of getting out of the virtual world and coming back into the regular world. And so the big debate was, how do you make games to take advantage of this, but you can't have something like a Call of Duty where people would be necessarily playing 10, 15 hours, you know, if you're doing a marathon session.
Oh, yeah.
And I think what's really gone well now is that you have the casual games, but you also have some of the more interactive games. We were starting to see this coming out toward some of the later PlayStation VR games. So, for example, you have things like the Star Wars Tales from the Galaxy's Edge, which has been out on PC, but is available for this. You have a Jurassic World game, which is quite good. I mean, who doesn't want to deal with dinosaurs in VR? A lot of fun. You have, you know, Horizon Call of the Mountain. People who like the Horizon Zero Dawn series, they're going to like this. But you also have some of the more casual things. And then one of the ones that I'm really looking forward to, it was supposed to be a launch title, but it got pushed back, was the folks who made Until Dawn had a game called Until Dawn Rush of Blood. And it was such an interesting concept in that it was a horror game, but it was a shooter. So you would have two different guns that you would work with your virtual weaponry, but you were also on carnival tracks. So you would go through things like a funhouse. Areas of it would be like a roller coaster shoot. You would have to shoot your way through things. And then you had elements where it was literally like being on a virtual roller coaster or carnival ride. And then they would incorporate horror and things into that. Well, they've got a new game coming very soon. And then the beauty of it is the potential. The one that I am waiting on, you know, like crazy, is I keep hearing rumors, and I hope they're true, that a deal has been cut for Half-Life Alyx to come to the PSVR 2.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And that is like a really big deal because I do not have a VR set up for my computer. I kind of, you know, said I'm going to go with the PlayStation. I'm not doing this for the computer just yet, but I'm a big Half-Life fan. I've heard nothing but rave reviews about Alyx, and I really want to play it, but I'm not quite ready to throw down all that money for one for the PC just to play it. So we're hoping that. And then like anything else, it's going to be how well does it sell and how well, how well do the programmers take advantage of this? Now, what I'm really intrigued by, there was originally the report that the old VR games aren't going to work on this one because of the newer technology. But then we've already heard things like Beat Saber is going to make a patch available to bring it up to speed. And then you're hearing things like the Resident Evil games are going to, Resident Evil The Village is going to be compatible, and you can play if you have the PlayStation version. You can play it on the VR 2. The remastered Resident Evil 4 apparently is going to do the same thing. So now people are getting excited going, okay, what's out there? What is coming that is going to be exclusive to this platform? What is already out that is going to be updated for it? And then what is to come? And what I'm really intrigued by is we're hearing stories that certain games down the line are going to have massive multiplayer ability, because right now I think 4 is kind of like the most we've been able to see. And I'm kind of wondering, I know, you know, be curious if Ubisoft would go down this rabbit hole again. I've heard stories that maybe whoever is handling the Star Trek games might try an updated version of Bridge Commander. We've heard that an Alien game in VR is coming. Now, whether it's coming for the VR 2 or one of the other platforms, don't know yet. But if this platform continues to grow, it is going to be something. And, I mean, truthfully, who would be brave? I remember when Alien Isolation came out at E3, and they took us in a room. They showed us about 20 minutes of it, and then they put us in this area to play the game, and people were freaking out. We heard stories of some people were asked if they wanted to go play a VR version of it, and they were literally within like 2 minutes putting the headset down going, yeah, I this is too much. I can't handle this.
Who wants to live in that world?
Yeah, and it's like, now imagine it in 4K with all this eye tracking where it's, you know, even higher def, even faster frame rates. And, I mean, think about, you know, looking at an egg and that thing comes flying at you, the good old in 3D. Virtual reality, you have a chest burster, I mean, not the burster, the face hugger coming at you.
Yeah, I feel you, Gareth. I mean, that would scare the living, you know, bejesus out of me. Great to hear that about the launch of the PSVR 2. The game library that you have to have for a new, like, platform or anything like that has to be huge so you can capture that audience. It sounds like there are some great things in the works. This is going to be something awesome to check out. Big price point, but going to be worth it. Gareth, thank you so much for joining us. It's always great having you on.
Anytime. Take care now.
Thank you again so much, Gareth. Always awesome talking with you. I'm still sad that Liam Neeson is not going to be Qui-Gon Jinn again. He says, no, 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 I have done enough. But
I guess he doesn't have a particular set of skills with the lightsaber anymore.
Yeah, he also turned down a lot of money. I want that money. Moving on, I think it is time to get to...
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
Vicky, it's Movie Friday.
Movie Friday. Plus, I got some other extra stuff.
Ooh,
technically
bonuses
about,
stuff.
About movies, but not movies coming out this weekend.
Would that be The More?
The More.
More. What do you got for us, Vicky?
Sorry, I just had to like...
Soothing relief. This must be a good movie.
Well, I'm more excited about the movie I'm going to talk about after.
Oh.
Not so much what's going on right now. Oh. Or should I do that?
I don't know. Go to what you love, girl.
I'm so excited. If you guys have been following us on Facebook, you saw that I posted an article talking about how they're going to be rebooting a series again. The second reboot. So this would be the third version.
Okay.
Hellboy.
Oh, really?
Movie or show?
Movie.
Yeah.
And we are getting a rated R version.
This is...
Hugh Jackman is Hellboy.
Who the hell? I mean, David Harbour's Hellboy wasn't so loved. Who are we going to... What are they...
And the thing is, like, David Harbour was pretty awesome as Hellboy. The movie itself was not great. So I don't blame him for that. And Ron Perlman as Hellboy is the GOAT.
He's what I remember.
Guillermo del Toro, like, he can't do any wrong. He's a sweet little creepy treasure. And nice. I think he would appreciate me calling him that. But basically, they're going to be rebooting it rated R with a story that's called The Crooked Man. So it's Hellboy, The Crooked Man. And it follows Hellboy and rookie BPRD agent as they get stranded in the 1950s rural Appalachia, where they discover a small community haunted by witches led by the Crooked Man.
Oh, very nice.
And the only thing I'm a little concerned about this is who's the director.
Oh, who's that?
His name is Brian Taylor. And if you don't recognize that name, it's probably because he hasn't done a whole lot of stuff. And the stuff he has done, he did the movie Crank.
That was a pretty decent movie. I didn't hate that.
It was Crank and then Crank High Voltage, but, you know, I'm also kind of... He also did the screenplay for Jonah Hex, which we know that...
Oh.
That was a good one, but he hasn't, like, that's not a whole lot he's done.
Well, you know what? Everybody needs a shot, kid.
This would be great if it was his breakout movie.
Yeah.
Although he did help develop and did, like, the writing series for the show Happy, which I think you might have seen a little bit of or might be... thinking of another show.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I know Happy.
Happy has the actor Christopher Maloney.
Oh, I know who that is, but I don't know if I've seen Happy.
He has like that weird, like, kind of cartoon dude with him. Has like
don't know that show.
No, okay, I could have sworn it was you who saw it. I'm
sorry, buddy.
Of another one, but has also has Patton Oswalt on it. It was on the Sci-Fi show.
What, Patton Oswalt is going to be in the new show? Or
no, that was on this show, Happy. I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, I don't know that show.
Yeah, so he's a. It kind of makes me think of, you know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, just more blood.
What's
and
that? Is
awkward.
That the
Happy?
You're still talking about Happy.
Yeah. So to kind of give you an idea of what this director is going to be bringing to the table.
Maybe, I guess, right? I mean, depending upon what they want him to do with Hellboy. But, I feel like what you need is a good script, is really what you need. You really need a good script. And then, of course, you got to find an actor who's going to be Hellboy because it's an outlandish character, and mm-hmm. so you've got to, you know, whenever you have outlandish characters, you got to have an actor that really can humanize it in the midst of being in this outlandish makeup. I think of Doug Jones as Saru on Star Trek Discovery. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makeup is insane, and yet he really, really does a great job with that character.
Which is funny because Doug Jones was in the first Hellboy.
Yes,
movies.
He was. He was Abe.
I'm thinking it has to be more like a rated R Batman, like with the last one we got, where it's like a detective, because Hellboy has to kind of go on that journey, but he's kind of removed from the world in a way. He's like hidden, so it has to be that kind of dark.
I feel though like Hellboy, even though he is that dark character, he is a sassy mofo. Like, he is such a snarky, grumpy old man. You need that like Ron Perlman-esque to him, but because this is going to be rated R, I'm thinking it's going to be more creepy, crawly kind of creature vibes, I think. But we don't really know much except that they're going to start filming in April of this year. So we'll kind of see where they go. Mike Mignola, who is the creator of Hellboy, did a lot of the artwork for it.
Yes.
He is involved with this project.
That's always a nice thing to have the guy that created it involved.
Direct involvement, and they do want to make it very, very true to the art style of him. So we'll see if this is going to be a good reboot. Usually when they do reboots, it's not a great time.
It's a movie we can all see, though. Very rarely do we find a three-person movie that we all want to see.
Yeah. Vicky's kind of not in yet.
No,
she doesn't know.
I love Hellboy. I do
love
Hellboy.
Yeah, but what if it's really scary, creepy, and stuff that you don't like?
Is Ron Perlman going to be in it?
Ron Perlman is too old for this role.
I know.
What if he shows up?
If he shows up, I'm definitely going to go see it. That'd be freaking awesome. But okay, there are two movies that you can check out in the meantime that are coming out this weekend. One, because it is this ridiculous, and I have to bring it up. Cocaine Bear.
Cocaine Bear.
As of right, at the timing of this recording, it only has 7 reviews, but it is at 100%.
Oh, maybe
And I love the director.
Yeah, Elizabeth Banks is directing.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
The thing that kills me when you see the trailer, it has an actor named Christian Convery, who we know from Sweet Tooth. He is Sweet Tooth.
And he's a little kid?
Yeah, and he's just swearing, "That's effed." It just cracks me up.
Yeah.
I love it when other little kids are swearing and not my little brother.
Thank
then
you,
his teachers,
little brother.
I get a phone call from his teacher.
No.
But this looks so messed up, so awesome. And if anybody does get a chance to go see it this weekend, we want to hear your review. So please, I really want to know.
I'm going to give people a quick little hint. Gareth actually went and saw it. I heard right before this recording, and he said it was very entertaining.
Oh, that's all you want from a movie where the premise is a story that just a bear got into cocaine and that was it.
Loosely based on true story.
Based, I mean, which is just great. If they, you know what, Elizabeth, I hope this is a big hit for you because I love the whole idea.
I honestly think this movie came from the meme because somebody, I think it was a Reddit thread, or not a Reddit thread, excuse me, maybe Tumblr thread, where they were talking about the story of the cocaine bear, and someone made a comment saying, like, you know, for a good hour, this bear was, like, the top apex predator in the entire world for about an hour, and nobody knew about it. And so I think it probably, like, you know what? What would happen if we gave a bear a crap ton of cocaine and...
Yeah.
You know, left him out to do his thing.
I hope she just walked into a meeting and she just put a picture of a bear and a picture of a bag of cocaine and said, "I've got an idea."
That's all you need. That's the pitch meeting, baby.
I mean, I'd like take my money.
As a matter of fact, I cannot wait to see the Ryan George pitch meeting of this movie.
Oh,
that's right.
Which, you know, he's got a great series on YouTube for every. If you haven't found Ryan George yet and pitch meetings, oh, you're welcome.
They are amazing. I remember we started, I think the first one we started watching was the Wonder Woman pitch meeting.
Yeah, that's like, what got us. Yeah. Started, yeah, because we were so disappointed with WW84.
Now, there's a lot of shows out there that I feel like get a lot of attention, and then either you hear about them and you're like, "Oh, I'll get to it eventually," and then it's been, you know, 13 years later, and you're like, "Yeah, I still haven't gotten to that." This one, Luther, it was a TV series starring Idris Elba.
Yes.
I had no idea, but apparently they're releasing a movie this weekend on Netflix called Luther, the Fallen Son. Didn't hear anything about this, but, you know, Idris Elba is back. Andy Serkis is also in this, but it's an epic continuation of the television saga reimagined for film. A gruesome serial killer is terrorizing London while brilliant but disgraced detective John Luther, which is Idris Elba, sits behind bars and haunted by his failure to capture the cyber psychopath who now taunts him Luther decides to break out of prison to finish the job by any means necessary.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, this was a British TV show. I don't know if it ever got on BBC America, maybe.
Maybe.
Because I remember seeing a lot about the show, but never watched it either.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's kind of how a lot of people learned about Idris,
yeah. I heard he was on The Office and everyone talked about Luther. So if you're a Luther fan, this is definitely something you can watch, and you can watch it from the comfort of your own home. Isn't
nice.
That exciting?
Yeah, well, yeah, and I wonder, is that going to be one of those things where I watch that and then go, I got to go back and watch the whole series now?
Mm,
you know, like sort of watching the last episode of Breaking Bad going, hey, this is a good show. We should watch this.
And we know somebody who actually did that.
Yep.
And just checking right now, it looks like you can watch Luther, according to a quick Google search, which, you know, is never wrong. You can watch it on the Roku channel, Hulu, BritBox, Prime Video, Vudu, or Apple TV.
Ah, Hulu. There you go.
So you can still, if you do end up liking it, you can watch it. I'm sure it might even be on Netflix because the movie's on Netflix, but they get weird sometimes.
Yeah, they do.
Here's the second movie of the saga on Netflix. But if you want to watch the first one, you have to go pay for it on Amazon Prime. Like, it's never all in one place. But yeah, those are really the only movies that are coming out this weekend. You do have The Last of Us to check out, lots of other shows, and we want to hear from you. So please let us know what you think. And until next time, guys, stay nerdy.
Four episodes or five episodes together and stick them up on the screen.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because he was willing to come back for his cameo.
Sure.
Yep. But he wasn't willing to come back and do a series. So was it time? Was it money? I mean, yeah, he's working, but we've talked off air. If you look at his last few films, they haven't lit up the box office. And yes, you can blame the pandemic and so on, but they've been a mixed bag. We've been sent a lot of them to essentially, put in a password, watch it over your computer. But it's essentially the same tough guy role with a, questionable past, trying to make good film. And he said for years, I'm getting too old to be playing these tough guys in these action films, yet he keeps doing it. I mean, his new film is a take on Philip Marlowe, the detective, but again, it is an action film and so on and so forth. So, I sit there and go, why wouldn't you return to your beloved character unless you don't want to do the commitment that a TV series would ask for versus a film? Or, what is it? Or is the schedule just too busy? And it's surprising, but that was his stated reason, that he felt it would just take away from the films too much.
Ah, that's too bad. I don't know. His agent didn't talk to me because I would have made it happen. I wanted to see him back as Qui-Gon Jinn. I mean, I grew up with those movies, early 2000s. You know, him and Obi-Wan. I mean, they were so good. But unfortunately, it sounds like it will not be in the works. Before we get out of here, Gareth, I did want to talk a little about the PSVR 2 launch. Now, I know you've got one of these in, back at your house. How are you enjoying it?
Well, the technology is pretty impressive, I'll tell you that. You can go into it forever with the tech specs, but the multiple cameras that are built into it, so you don't have to have the camera in front of the TV, the 4K, the eye tracking, the new controllers are really nice, and I think it's fantastic. I know at first a lot of people are going to be faced with sticker shock. That $569 price tag, is more than the console, but as I tell people, if you get past that and look at the hardware, comparable priced units are $700 to $1,000 for the PC. So you're getting a really good piece of hardware. So for me, what it comes down to is the games. And what I'm really happy about is when the PSVR 1 launched, there were a handful of games that I felt were really enjoyable. But the trick with a lot of the games for me was they were enjoyable in small amounts, so like 30 minutes or so at a time. And when you took the helmet off, there was that kind of, I don't want to say disorientation, but there was that reacclimation of getting out of the virtual world and coming back into the regular world. And so the big debate was, how do you make games to take advantage of this, but you can't have something like a Call of Duty where people would be necessarily playing 10, 15 hours, if you're doing a marathon session.
Oh, yeah.
And I think what really gone well now is that you have the casual games, but you also have some of the more interactive games. We were starting to see this coming out toward some of the later PlayStation VR games. So, for example, you have things like the Star Wars Tales from the Galaxy's Edge, which has been out on PC, but is available for this. You have a Jurassic World game, which is quite good. I mean, who doesn't want to deal with dinosaurs in VR? A lot of fun. You have, Horizon Call of the Mountain. People who like the Horizon Zero Dawn series, they're going to like this. But you also have some of the more casual things. And then one of the ones that I'm really looking forward to, it was supposed to be a launch title, but it got pushed back, was the folks who made Until Dawn had a game called Until Dawn Rush of Blood. And it was such an interesting concept in that it was a horror game, but it was a shooter. So you would have two different guns that you would work with your virtual weaponry, but you were also on carnival tracks. So you would go through things like a funhouse. Areas of it would be like a roller coaster shoot. You would have to shoot your way through things. And then you had elements where it was literally like being on a virtual roller coaster or carnival ride. And then they would incorporate horror and things into that. Well, they've got a new game coming very soon. And then the beauty of it is the potential. The one that I am waiting on, you know, like crazy, is I keep hearing rumors, and I hope they're true, that a deal has been cut for Half-Life Alyx to come to the PSVR 2.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And that is like a really big deal because I do not have a VR set up for my computer. I kind of, you know, said I'm going to go with the PlayStation. I'm not doing this for the computer just yet, but I'm a big Half-Life fan. I've heard nothing but rave reviews about Alyx, and I really want to play it, but I'm not quite ready to throw down all that money for one for the PC just to play it. So we're hoping that. And then like anything else, it's going to be how well does it sell and how well do the programmers take advantage of this? Now, what I'm really intrigued by, there was originally the report that the old VR games aren't going to work on this one because of the newer technology. But then we've already heard things like Beat Saber is going to make a patch available to bring it up to speed. And then you're hearing things like the Resident Evil games are going to, Resident Evil The Village is going to be compatible, and you can play if you have the PlayStation version. You can play it on the VR too. The remastered Resident Evil 4 apparently is going to do the same thing. So now people are getting excited going, okay, what's out there? What is coming that is going to be exclusive to this platform? What is already out that is going to be updated for it? And then what is to come? And what I'm really intrigued by is we're hearing stories that certain games down the line are going to have massive multiplayer ability. Because right now, I think 4 is kind of like the most we've been able to see. And I'm kind of wondering, I know, you know, be curious if Ubisoft would go down this rabbit hole again. I've heard stories that maybe whoever is handling the Star Trek games might try an updated version of Bridge Commander. We've heard that an Alien game in VR is coming. Now, whether it's coming to, for the VR 2 or one of the other platforms, don't know yet. But if this platform continues to grow, it is going to be something. And, I mean, truthfully, who would be brave? I remember when Alien Isolation came out at E3, and they took us in a room, they showed us about 20 minutes of it, and then they put us in this area to play the game, and people were freaking out. We heard stories of some people were asked if they wanted to go play a VR version of it, and they were literally within like 2 minutes putting the headset down going, yeah, I this is too much, I can't handle this.
Who wants to live in that world?
Yeah, and it's like, now imagine it in 4K with all this eye tracking where it's, even higher def, even faster frame rates. And, I mean, think about, you know, looking at an egg and that thing comes flying at you. The good old, in 3D, virtual reality, you have a chest burster, the face hugger coming at you.
Yeah, I feel you, Gareth. I mean, that would scare the living, you know, bejesus out of me. Great to hear that about the launch of the PSVR 2. The game library that you have to have for a new, like, platform or anything like that has to be huge so you can capture that audience. It sounds like there are some great things in the works. This is going to be something awesome to check out. Big price point, but going to be worth it. Gareth, thank you so much for joining us. It's always great having you on.
Anytime. Take care now.
Thank you again so much, Gareth. Always awesome talking with you. I'm still sad that Liam Neeson is not going to be Qui-Gon Jinn again. He says, no, 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 I have done enough.
Oh.
But
I guess he doesn't have a particular set of skills with the lightsaber anymore.
Yeah, he also turned down a lot of money. I want that money. Moving on, I think it is time to get to...
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
Vicky, it's Movie Friday.
Movie Friday. Plus, I got some other extra stuff.
Ooh,
technically
bonuses
about,
stuff.
About movies, but not movies coming out this weekend.
Would that be The More?
The More.
What do you got for us, Vicky?
Sorry, I just had to like...
Soothing relief. This must be a good movie.
Well, I'm more excited about the movie I'm going to talk about after.
Ooh.
Not so much what's going on right now. Or should I do that? Maybe, you know what?
I don't know why. Go to what you love, girl.
I'm so excited. If you guys have been following us on Facebook, you saw that I posted an article talking about how they're going to be rebooting a series again. The second reboot. So this would be the third version.
Okay.
Hellboy.
Oh, really?
Movie or show?
Movie.
Yeah.
And we are getting a rated R version.
This is
Hugh Jackman is Hellboy.
Who the hell? I mean, David Harbour's Hellboy wasn't so loved. Who are we gonna? What are they?
And the thing is, like, David Harbour was pretty awesome as Hellboy. The movie itself was not great, so I don't blame him for that. And Ron Perlman as Hellboy is the goat.
He's what I remember.
Guillermo del Toro, like, he can't do any wrong. He's a sweet little creepy treasure. And
nice.
I think he would appreciate me calling him that. But basically, they're going to be rebooting it rated R with a story that's called The Crooked Man. So it's Hellboy, The Crooked Man, and it follows Hellboy and rookie BPRD agent as they get stranded in the 1950s rural Appalachia, where they discover a small community haunted by witches led by the Crooked Man.
Oh, it has.
And the only thing I'm a little concerned about this is who's the director.
Oh, who's that?
His name is Brian Taylor. And if you don't recognize that name, it's probably because he hasn't done a whole lot of stuff. And the stuff he has done, he did the movie Crank.
That was a pretty decent movie. I didn't hate that.
It was Crank and then Crank High Voltage, but, you know, I'm also kind of... And he also did the screenplay for Jonah Hex, which we know that...
Oh.
That was a good one, but he hasn't, like, that's not a whole lot he's done.
Well, you know what? Everybody needs a shot, kid.
This would be great if it was his breakout movie.
Yeah.
Although he did help develop and did, the writing series for the show Happy, which I think you might have seen a little bit of, or might be... thinking of another show.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I know Happy.
Happy has the actor Christopher Maloney.
Oh, I know who that is, but I don't know if I've seen Happy.
He has like that weird like kind of cartoon dude with him.
Know that show.
No, okay, I could have sworn it was you who saw it. I'm
sorry,
thinking
buddy.
Of another one, but has Patton Oswalt on it. It was on the sci-fi show.
What, Patton Oswalt's going to be in the new show?
No, that was on this show, Happy, I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, I don't know that show.
Yeah, so he's a... It kind of makes me think of, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, just more blood.
What's that? Is that the...
Happy.
You're still talking about Happy.
Yeah, so to kind of give you an idea of what this director is going to be bringing to the table.
Maybe, I guess, right?
Yeah.
I mean, depending upon what they want him to do with Hellboy, but, I feel like what you need is a good script, is really what you need. You really need a good script. And then, of course, you got to find an actor who's going to be Hellboy because it's an outlandish character, and so you've got to whenever you have outlandish characters, you got to have an actor that really can humanize it in the midst of being in this outlandish makeup. I think of Doug Jones as Saru on Star Trek Discovery. Mm-hmm. That makeup is insane, and yet he really, really does a great job with that character.
Which is funny because Doug Jones was in the first Hellboy.
Yes,
movies.
He was. He was Abe.
I'm thinking it has to be more like a rated R Batman, like with the last one we got, where it's like a detective, because Hellboy has to kind of go on that journey, but he's kind of removed from the world in a way. He's like hidden, so it has to be that kind of dark.
I feel though like Hellboy, even though he is that dark character, he is a sassy mofo. Like, he is such a snarky, grumpy old man. You need that like Ron Perlman-esque to him, but because this is going to be rated R, I'm thinking it's going to be more creepy, crawly kind of creature vibes, I think. But we don't really know much except that they're going to start filming in April of this year. So we'll kind of right. see where they go. Mike Mignola, who is the creator of Hellboy, did a lot of the artwork for it.
Yes.
He is involved with this project.
That's always a nice thing to have the guy that created it involved.
Direct involvement, and they do want to make it very, very true to the art style of him. So we'll see if this is going to be a good reboot. Usually when they do reboots, it's not a great time.
It's a movie we can all see, though. Very rarely do we find a three-person movie that we all want to see.
Yeah. Vicky's kind of not in yet.
No, I love Hellboy. I do love Hellboy.
Yeah, but what if it's really scary, creepy, and stuff that you don't like?
Is Ron Perlman going to be in it?
Ron Perlman is too old for this role.
I know.
What if he shows up?
If he shows up, I'm definitely going to go see it. That'd be freaking awesome. But okay, there are two movies that you can check out in the meantime that are coming out this weekend. One, because it is this ridiculous, and I have to bring it up. Cocaine Bear.
Cocaine Bear.
As of right, at the timing of this recording, it only has 7 reviews, but it is at 100%.
Oh, maybe we can book it.
And I love the director.
Yeah, Elizabeth Banks is directing.
Oh, that's right, yes.
The thing that kills me, when you see the trailer, it has an actor named Christian Convery, who we know from Sweet Tooth. He is Sweet Tooth.
And he's a little kid?
Yeah, and he's just swearing, that's effed. It just cracks me up.
Yeah.
I love it when other little kids are swearing and not my little brother.
Thank you, little brother.
I get a phone call from his teacher.
No.
This looks so messed up, so awesome. And if anybody does get a chance to go see it this weekend, we want to hear your reviews. So please, I really want to know.
I'm going to give people a quick little hint. Gareth actually went and saw it, I heard, right before this recording, and he said it was very entertaining.
Oh, that's all you want from a movie where the premise is a story that just a bear got into cocaine and that was it.
Loosely based on a true story.
Based, I mean, which is just great. Elizabeth, I hope this is a big hit for you because I love the whole idea.
I honestly think this movie came from the meme because somebody, I think it was maybe Tumblr thread, where they were talking about the story of the cocaine bear, and someone made a comment saying, like, you know, for a good hour, this bear was like the top apex predator in the entire world for about an hour, and nobody knew about it. And so I think it probably, like, you know what? What would happen if we gave a bear a crap ton of cocaine and...
Yeah.
You know, left him out to do his thing.
I hope she just walked into a meeting and she just put a picture of a bear and a picture of a bag of cocaine and said, I've got an idea.
That's all you need. That's the pitch meeting, baby.
I mean, I'd like take my money.
As a matter of fact, I cannot wait to see the Ryan George pitch meeting of this movie.
Oh,
that's right.
He's got a great series on YouTube for every review. If you haven't found Ryan George yet and pitch meetings, oh, you're welcome.
They are amazing. I remember the first one we started watching was the Wonder Woman pitch meeting.
Yeah, that's what got us. Started, because we were so disappointed with WW84.
Now, there's a lot of shows out there that I feel like get a lot of attention, and then either you hear about them and you're like, oh, I'll get to it eventually, and then it's been, 13 years later, and you're like, yeah, I still haven't gotten to that. This one, Luther, it was a TV series starring Idris Elba.
Yes.
I had no idea, but apparently they're releasing a movie this weekend on Netflix called Luther, the Fallen Son. Didn't hear anything about this, but, Idris Elba is back. Andy Serkis is also in this, but it's an epic continuation of the television saga reimagined for film. A gruesome serial killer is terrorizing London while brilliant but disgraced detective John Luther, which is Idris Elba, sits behind bars and haunted by his failure to capture the cyber psychopath who now taunts him. Luther decides to break out of prison to finish the job by any means necessary.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, this was a British TV show. I don't know if it ever got on BBC America. Maybe.
Maybe.
Because I remember seeing a lot about the show, but never watched it either.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's kind of how a lot of people learned about Idris,
yeah.
I think.
I think I heard he was on The Office and everyone talked about Luther. So if you're a Luther fan, this is definitely something you can watch, and you can watch it from the comfort of your own home. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, and I wonder, is that going to be one of those things where I watch that and then go, I got to go back and watch the whole series now?
Maybe.
Like sort of watching the last episode of Breaking Bad going, hey, this is a good show. We should watch this.
And we know somebody who actually did that.
Yep.
And just checking right now, it looks like you can watch Luther, according to a quick Google search, which, is never wrong. You can watch it on the Roku channel, Hulu, BritBox, Prime Video, Vudu, or Apple TV.
Ah, Hulu. There you go.
So you can still, if you do end up liking it, you can watch it. I'm sure it might even be on Netflix because the movie's on Netflix, but they get weird sometimes.
Yeah, they do.
Here's the second movie of the saga on Netflix. But if you want to watch the first one, you have to go pay for it on Amazon Prime. It's never all in one place. But yeah, those are really the only movies that are coming out this weekend. You do have The Last of Us to check out, lots of other shows, and we want to hear from you. So please let us know what you think. And until next time, guys, stay nerdy.